Hey Central Ohio, the nationwide Children's Marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. COTA riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist COTA customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the nationwide Children's Marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at COTA.com. That's COTA.com. Good luck to all the runners.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Continuing my conversation with Professor Leela Philip of the College of Holy Cross. She teaches in the Environmental Studies program. She's a professor of English. And her new book is Beaverland, How One Weird Rodent Made America. This is the story of the beaver in North America, discovered as colonial Europe discovered America, as a source of trade and capital formation, as a source of wonder for what it can do to the environment, with the environment. And here in the 21st century now, I learned from the professor that the beaver is a fascination to science. People studying our natural world and asking, can we learn from this? What have we done wrong? How can we restore balance given the 8 to 9 billion people on the planet? Now dealing with the onerous climate change story, at the same time, we want to live better lives. So we go to the beaver, Castor canadensis, and we ask, is a beaver intelligent? Professor, it's meant to be a provocative question. Immediately, everybody's going to think, what's intelligence? But in the scheme of things, how have beavers been regarded, and what are we learning about their ability to construct radical environmental solutions and at the same time learn? Good evening again.
Well, thank you. Well, first of all, I'd have to say that beavers have fueled the human imagination on every continent that they've been found. So this question of beavers and how smart are they or aren't they has gone way back to Aesop. So one of Aesop's fables is that the beavers are so canny that they can remove their testicles and throw them at hunters to divert them. So there have been all kinds of theories about beaver cleverness that are not related to anything to do with factual, even anatomy. Beavers actually have internal glands. They don't even have external glands. But you know, to think about this today, what we're understanding now is that we really don't have up-to-date science on the animal itself. Most of what we know about beavers has been based on studies of what beavers can do, which is build. So they're brilliant at building things. And we've studied their dams and their lodges and their beaver damming complexes. And we have quite a bit of information about that. But as to beaver intelligence, we've had a lot of, you know, fun thinking about it at times. I mean, there were some papers that came out of Switzerland and Europe and Russia in the 60s from the Brain Institute, but they didn't get very far. I think I really leaned hard into this question because I really wanted to find out, what do we know about the beaver brain? And it turns out, as I say, we really don't know very much, because if we just look at the traditional barometers of how you measure intelligence, the beaver doesn't rank very high. It's got the intelligence, you know, something in the Rodentia line, better than a squirrel, less than the Norway rat. But part of studying beaver intelligence is logistical, because they live mostly underwater, they're clumsy on land, they can barely see. And, you know, good luck trying to get them to go in a maze or pull a lever. Those kinds of traditional lab experiments just don't work with a beaver. But I write about this scientist that I found out about her work at Harvard, Jordan Kennedy. And I think she has begun to really crack the code in interesting ways by thinking about beaver intelligence, not so much in terms of the individual, but in terms of a collective intelligence.
Right. Jordan Kennedy has studied termites who think collectively, and she now studies beavers thinking collectively, but she has an additional detail that is revelatory. She's part of the Blackfeet tribe, and she combines her thinking as a researcher in the 21st century with the legend of her peoples and the beaver bundle. What is that, Professor?
Yeah, well, just to go back up a step, I mean, she's also at Harvard. When I interviewed her, she was a member of the Soft Math Lab, and that's a lab at Harvard which combines mathematics, physics, engineering, evolutionary biology, and they study phenomena in the natural world. So biomimicry, basically looking at design applications from the natural world, but also in particular, many of the people in that lab are looking at robotics. And so it's really interesting to think about the research that she was doing on beavers and thinking about them in relation to, say, termites and ants and bees who build by following simple rules. So that's a kind of behavior that's called stigmergy. And people have studied those kind of rules and developed algorithms that have been used for robotics. So I think it's really fascinating to think that there might be in the future kind of beaver bots. I mean, imagine if we could have underwater bots the size of beavers that could help us in high flood situations. But anyway, leaving that aside, the other thing that I think is pretty amazing about Jordan Kennedy as an individual, and we talked a lot about it in the book, was she grew up on the Blackfeet Reservation and really grew up in the culture of the Blackfeet. And the Blackfeet historically have been, as a indigenous peoples of the arid northern plains, they understood the value of the beaver in bringing water. And in fact, the Blackfeet had strict prohibitions against hunting beavers. So while the Algonquian peoples of the woodland, forests out here in the east allowed for the hunting of beavers, in arid northern plains areas, peoples like the Blackfeet prohibited the hunting of beavers altogether. And I think they understood that the beavers played a much more valuable role managing the water cycle, bringing water to the land, slowing it down, cleansing it. So all the reasons why beavers are valued today as aids in helping us with problems we're facing with climate change, drought and wildfire and flooding, the indigenous peoples understood millennia ago and throughout and still understand today, because there are programs in the Blackfeet Reservation right now to restore beavers to river systems. So it's really interesting.
The beaver is a built-in system of metrics. And one of the ones that I learned from the professor's conversation with Jordan Kennedy is that the beaver tail, not to be slighted, it looks odd. As the professor says, it looks like a car ran over it. It's quite flattened. But I'm told that it has cells in it that can measure the flow of water. Why is that important? Because a beaver will not attempt to dam something that's more than 250 liters per second. Do you know what 250 liters per second is? I certainly don't, but a beaver does. That explains the genius here. It doesn't try to hold back a flood. It develops a way of building up a pool, a beaver pool with a dam. And I take it, Professor, because you observe many more beaver dams in your research than I will in my whole life, that a beaver dam isn't absolutely blocking water all the time. There is water flowing through it. They're patching it all the time. But they make sure that the water that flows through it isn't excessive. Is that correct? I mean, they're managing the water constantly. It's not just build it and forget it.
Yeah, I mean, I think you've said that really well. And I'm watching beavers right here. I hope we have a little chance to talk about that. So normally beavers would not be creating a wetland in the winter, but because we had this strangely warm January and February out here until recently anyway, the beavers took advantage of that warm weather and their dam was breached. They had a near fatal situation in their pond. They had to flee. What might have been fatal became an opportunity because of the warm weather. And I've been watching them build a new dam. And what's been really interesting is to watch where they built it, this perfect sort of pinch point where, exactly as you say, the water is the right flow rate. But then also to watch how for a period of time they stopped the water altogether. And then just a couple weeks ago, they actually allowed a little current of water to go through. And I was there with a researcher yesterday, and we actually measured the height of the dam and we figured out how much water is being impounded now behind it, quite a bit. And he figured there's now enough water pressure behind the dam that the beavers have kind of figured that they need to let some of that pressure out. So how are they making these decisions? How do they know to make these decisions at the right time? We don't know yet, but we can observe that they are making them. And they're going to do that before the dam breaches or breaks. So I love that. You know, we have all this sophisticated science equipment and we can measure exactly the flow rate. And the beaver, you know, can apparently figure that out, we think, from the sensitivity of the blood vessels in the tail. But this is another example of what we thought we knew about the beaver, we've had to reevaluate, because previous to Jordan Kennedy's study, it was widely thought that beavers responded to the sound of water, and that's why they would build. And her point is, if that were only true, if that were the only environmental cue, they would be trying to block up Niagara Falls, which they don't try to do. They know, like in your local river, that it's too strong. They won't try to dam the Connecticut River or a swift river. They might swim in it and use it for transportation, but they won't try to block it up. They can't stop that kind of a flow rate. So again and again, we're discovering that we need more information about the mammal itself.
The mammal itself and what it can do for our river systems. We're going to go to the Yale Myers Forest in Connecticut with the professor next. And then we're going to go to the White Birch Mountains because the beaver is teaching all the time. The book is Beaver Land: How One Weird Rodent Made America. Lila Philip is the author. I'm John Batch.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
It's Cybersecurity Awareness Month. LifeLock is here with tips to help protect your identity. Use strong passwords, set up multi-factor authentication, report scams, and update your software. And for comprehensive identity protection, LifeLock is your best choice. LifeLock alerts you to suspicious uses of your personal information and fixes identity theft, guaranteed, or your money back. Start your protection today with a 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com. Use promo code NEWS. Terms apply.
Hey, Central Ohio. The nationwide Children's Marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. COTA riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist COTA customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the nationwide Children's Marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at COTA.com. That's COTA.com. Good luck to all the runners.